brothers from the twins. Well, then Rigby doesn't jump up on me and try and eat, like, my earphones while I'm talking.
Brothers from the twins. Oh, yeah. There it is. There's that sweet North Dakota nasally accent. Woo, baby. That's what I've been waiting all day for. Put that in my ear hole and smoke it up. Brothers from the Twin Cities, Twins baseball talk to contact. Twin brothers from the Twin Cities, Twins baseball talk to contact. Talk to contact, talk to contact. I am Paul Pleiss, the baseball pirate, joined by the Iron Man of the podcast, Cody Christie from West Fargo, North Dakota, repping that F-Town pride. Cody, welcome back.
Yeah, good to be back. We had the last member of the Toxic Contact crew got married last week, Eric, so he's off honeymooning in Nolens. I believe is how you said it there, Paul, before we got on the air. You were at the wedding, obviously, and got to take in all that fun, and now we're back. The Twins have been playing well, and things are going good.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like since May has started, the Twins, I believe, are 12-5 on the month after playing 500 ball in April. And as much as I'm enjoying this, I feel like I keep waiting for the Twins to, like, fall off a cliff and lose, like, 10 in a row.
But like, for the bubble to burst.
They keep playing well. Kyle Gibson is going in the next series, and he's somehow has a sub-3 ERA despite, like, striking out no one. I feel like I felt with Danny Santana last year, like, just I'm enjoying the ride. I'm having a good time watching, you know, just – but I'm just waiting for that crash. And it's just fun to watch a team that's winning. You know, look at the standings. I know we're only 25% into the season, but the Twins have a hold of that second wild card spot. And it's exciting. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the way, I mean, everyone kind of knew the AL Central was going to be a little bit of a wish-wash this year. Not really sure who was going to end up on the top, but most people thought, you know, no matter what, the Twins would be the ones on the bottom, and here they are, you know, three games out of first place as we enter play tonight on Thursday, you know, with a legitimate shot at, you know, at least contending in this early part of the season. So it's been fun. Like you said, I've kind of felt the same way about it. Is, you know, I'm waiting for it all to kind of crash and burn, but it seems to be just like, no matter what series they've been in, minus the games against Detroit, they seem to be able to take two out of three or three out of four. And when you're doing that, I mean, you're gonna, I mean, obviously end up with a pretty decent record. They're outscoring teams. Their run differential is not too shabby. And I think we've seen some good things out of the bullpen after that, looking at the beginning of the season, like it could be a major liability. And it has looked good, even with some guys underperforming maybe a little. Brian Dunsing's had some rough goes, but Blaine Boyer has bounced back pretty nicely after being pretty much trash for the first week. Aaron Thompson, minus a little bit here and there, has been looked pretty decent. So, and Glenn Perkins is, I mean, after all the question marks surrounding him at the end of last season, not knowing what to expect out of him,
he even looked kind of rough in the spring, and he's just been lights out.
Yeah, like it's been pretty unbelievable. I mean, he's probably on the way to being on the All-Star team again, just because it's hard to know who the big standout would be on the Twins that would get that All-Star game nod. So they usually look to the relief core.
The Twins, I mean, you look at some of their season stats, like the pitching staff, you look at I think their starting ERA is in the bottom third of the league. Their bullpen ERA is in the bottom third of the league. I mean, a lot of that, I think, was those first, you know, seven games when they were 1-6, and the bullpen was just imploding. I mean, we've even seen Blaine Boyer turn things around. I don't want to get too rosy on Blaine Boyer, because I feel like he's still a pumpkin. But, I mean, they're scoring just enough runs to win. I feel like when the other team scores six or seven, the Twins go out and put an eight spot on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw, like, last night, the 13-inning game. The Twins just fight and claw. The bullpen puts together seven immaculate innings, you know, highlighted by, you know, except for Brian Dunsing. We're going to have to talk about him later. But J.R. Graham turned in quite a gem. I mean, and then Joe Mauer goes and breaks that home run streak and pops his first home run in the 13th inning and ends up being the game winner.
First home run since, like, last August, I believe, the middle of last August. So,
yeah, it's been a long time coming.
67 games or something crazy like that. But you got a hold of one, yeah, definitely. And finally put the Twins ahead in that game. And like we said, you know, the bullpen took care of the rest from there. Glenn Perkins came in and shut the door. So.
Yep, and I think one thing you have to think about is the Twins team did this with after sending like four or five guys onto the DL.
Yep. And
I think we'll start there. I mean, Tim Stauffer came back from the DL. He got reinstated, roster move today, this morning, I believe, Thursday morning. Doug Brunier got sent down, so the Twins now have that 13-man pitching staff that we saw so often under Ron Gardenhier. And so that maybe hurts the bench a little bit, but when you're losing Doug Brunier, I don't, you know, that's pretty much a wash. Tim Stauffer has been terrible to start the season, and his rehab starts haven't been any better.
Like, his rehab starts were like, he was topping out at 87 on, by some reports. Like, it was bad, and there was, they could have left him down for longer, which is what really boggles my mind about this. They could have left him down there for get a few more innings in, make sure his velocity was back up. So it doesn't make sense to me that he's already back up here unless, yeah, it just doesn't make sense, no matter how I think about it.
One of those other DL moves, saw Aaron Hicks come up, and I don't know if we had a chance to talk about Hicks since his promotion. His first couple of games started off real hot. Was doing, you know, actually hitting for a little bit power besides hitting a little bit of walks. He's cooled off considerably since then. He's not taking those walks that we've seen him do in the past. I think his line currently sits at 267 with a 290 on base and a 300 slugging with just one extra base hit to go along with eight strikeouts and, like I said, just one walk. So that's been a little bit hard to watch offensively. I feel like he may be trending back into that guy that we saw for the last couple seasons and not kind of that guy we've all been waiting for him to be, the guy we saw down in Rochester to start the season. But the defense from Aaron Hicks in the outfield has been excellent and such a vast improvement over guys like Arcia, Torrey Hunter, and the likes that they've been sending out there, Escobar, Nunez, all these infielders in the outfielder. So, what are your reflections on Aaron Hicks so far, quarter way into this season?
Yeah, I mean, the strikeouts are obviously a little bit concerning. I think they hit on some good pitchers in that Tampa Bay series. I'm wondering if some of that was just some of the competition he was facing there. But I mean, he has had. The Pittsburgh series, it was a short little two-game stint. He was 3-for-9, did draw a walk. So there have been some positive things out of him offensively. To me, you know, I mean, if we're getting, if we're getting the average like he's at now, you know, the 270 out of him, obviously, we'd like to see some more walks to get closer to those minor league numbers that you were talking about. Just because he, throughout his major league or minor league career, his professional career, he's shown that ability to draw those walks. And with only one walk so far, pitchers probably know that they can attack him just from a mental state of his mind, maybe, you know, being a little hesitant. So it'll be interesting to see, as we go forward. I mean, we have such a small sample size at the major league level right now with Hicks. So I would like to see him maybe, you know, move around the bases a little bit more throughout his – now he's had one steal and one caught stealing so far since he's been up. And we've seen some of the – sometimes the Twins being a little bit more aggressive here under Molitor on the bases. So I'd like to see more on that. But, again, that's going to come down to getting on base. You know, he's got to get walks. He's got to – if his batting average isn't going to be too high, he has to be on base in order to steal. So something definitely to watch as we continue to watch the Aaron Hicks mature.
Oh, excuse me. And I wanted to welcome into the show Jay Korn joining us fresh off of the bus.
Is this thing on? Welcome. Hello? Is this thing on?
Welcome. I missed you for the last couple of weeks while I was away.
Yeah,
well, welcome back to the show.
I've missed you guys too. I'm sure you did the E-Rolf update already, and I heard you talking about Hicks. Did you guys mention the little hitch in his hands on the left hand side of the plate? I wanted to talk about that.
Oh, please do. We have not gone that way.
Well, if you notice, when Hicks is batting from the left side of the plate now, he's got this pre-delivery hitch that he's doing with his hands. It's just kind of a trigger of sorts. He said he wanted to get a better feel of where the barrel of the bat was. He couldn't feel it or know where it was as well from the left side. He's not doing it from the right side, which I found pretty interesting. So it's two different. It's essentially two different swings. Certainly two different pre-triggers to the swing. Dick Bremer talked about it extensively on the broadcast last night. He's taken quite an interest in it. And that was implemented. That was implemented starting in spring training, but by Brunansky. Brunansky brought that up to him, suggested it. He's been using it. He's been using it successfully. I think it's one example of Brunansky's impact. I think we've seen it with Plouffe. We've seen it with some other players. Real happy with the job Brunansky's done with both Hicks and a lot of the other guys too.
Okay, and Jay, before you got on, Cody and I were just talking about how much fun it is to be watching some winning baseball, and really just, I mean, really, we waxed a little bit about how awesome Glenn Perkins has been this season, just after a rocky end of 2014 and then even rocky spring training.
Now,
but for you, a quarter way into the season, and Cody, I'll ask you this next, but what has been the biggest surprise for you besides that tally in the runs column a quarter way into this season?
I mean, you know, I mean, that's a good question. That's a good question. You know, I'd say Trevor Plouffe, to be honest with you. He's on my all-star list right now. He's been playing a solid defensive third base. He made a key play last night in like the 11th or 12th inning in Pittsburgh. You know, we know what he's been doing with the bat. He's got a grand slam. He's got a couple game-winning RBIs. The average is there. He's playing every single day. It looks like he's having fun. You know, guy like Plouffe... Pelfrey gets on base last night. Pelfrey gets a hit, and he's on first base. And Plouffe is yelling from the dugout, "You need a jacket? Can I bring you your jacket?" You know, I mean, it was just super funny. Those are the kind of things I like to see. The guys are definitely having fun. And while it may not be a huge surprise, I guess I'm most pleasantly surprised with the stability and production and just overall presence that Trevor Plouffe has had so far.
Yeah, I think that Trevor Plouffe has been a great surprise. He started off, I think, that first week, along with the rest of the offense, being stone cold. But he's really put together a nice, the last month, just been fantastic. He's got his OPS up over 800. And I think really the great thing is, and over the last few years, there hasn't been a lot of good things to watch on this club. But we've watched a true progression of Trevor Plouffe. We watch a guy who got moved all over the infield, was relegated to outfield duties, ended up at third base as a last resort, and had to learn the job on the fly, watched a lot of growing pains. He's turned into a plus defender. He's got that great pop in his bat, and he has just become an all-around plus player on the team. And I think you're right. It's been great to see just that confidence and that almost a little bit pompous attitude that he carries with him.
I think that's always been part of his attitude. You know, that's his California kind of guy. He kind of has that rub about him, and I think that's maybe why back when the Twins were moving around and trying to find a spot from him, why he might not have rubbed some people the right way. But yeah, things have definitely turn the corner. And I mean, it's nice that the Twins don't have to worry about, you know, rushing someone like a Miguel Sano to the big league level. They can let him, you know, kind of develop at his pace and mature into a notable player in these higher levels of the minor leagues, so that when Sano is ready, then he can make that jump. And, you know, that the Plouffe's making it easy for them to wait. So as far as my surprise, we kind of mentioned a couple things. One to me is just how well Glenn Perkins has looked, especially like we talked about after his September last year. I mean, obviously, just being the old Glenn Perkins, the Glenn Perkins we've seen year after year. So that's been nice. And another surprise for me on the offensive side, then, I think, is just what Torii Hunter has been able to do here. He, you know, has been able to do a lot of things, and he keeps getting older, but he seems to be able to find some way, somehow, offensively. Yeah. I mean, he's tied with Plouffe for second on the team in home runs. He's second on the tied for second on the team with Maurer for doubles. So he's hitting for power. He's only trails Maurer as far as the batting average department goes. So he's getting on base. He's hitting for power, and he's providing, you know, those leadership things that we were hoping for when the Twins signed him. So I, at the time, I was, you know, pretty disappointed. You know, not disappointed that Torii would be back, but that, you know, that he might be taking at-bats away from a younger player that might need him. But it's obviously starting to look like maybe that was a smart move by the Twins.
You know, back to Perkins for a minute. Right now, he leads the majors in saves, if I'm not mistaken. He's like 14 for 14 or 15 for 15. When I said that he was going to have, what did I say? He was going to have like 40 saves. You guys all shamed me. You shamed me into backing off my original number. I think I went with somewhere in the low 30s or something like that. But Perkins, I'm glad you brought him up because you know what? Talk about confidence, maybe a little pompousness. He looks good out there on the mound. He looks tall, strong, confident. He's just throwing strike after strike. He's his velocity is there. The movement's there on the slider. And, you know, what's actually interesting is that left-handers are hitting better than right-handers against him so far. But Perkins has been another good one, yeah.
And my biggest surprise, and I'm going to have to eat a little crow on this one, has been the emergence of Blaine Boyer. The first 2 weeks of the season, in his first 8 appearances, he had 4 inherited runners, 3 of them had scored. His ERA, was over 5, and he just looked like a mess. Could not get anybody out. The Twins are putting him in high leverage situations. And since that game against Kansas City where he gave up an inherited runner scored, he's only let one guy score in his last 12 appearances, and has whittled his own ERA all the way down to he's below 2.5. Had not been from the run scored, I think he gave up a run the other day. He had it almost down to 2 at 2.18, and has somehow just gotten things done recently. And as now, bad as much as I ragged on him.
Is Blaine Boyer the Twins setup man right now? Because it certainly seems like it as he is to me.
He's pitching like it. I mean, other than that, you know, that outing yesterday where he gave up a run and blew the save there coming in the 8th inning. You look at since Fien went down, almost every time Blaine Boyer has come in his last 10 appearances, looks like 8 of them have been in the 8th inning and then 2 in the 7th, including a game that he finished. So, I mean, he's that number 2 right now, and the combination with him and Perkins there, you know, righty-lefty at the back of the bullpen has been very impressive over the last month or so. Just very impressive, and that, I mean, 2 weeks into the season, I was calling for his head louder than just about anybody else, and I'm still not convinced that this is sustainable, but...
You changed your Twitter name to Blaine Belly Itcher or something.
Yeah, I did. A pitcher, not a belly itcher, and, Belly Itcher boil no more. Blaine Boyer is getting it done. So I don't know. That's my biggest surprise. And like I said, I had to eat some crow, but I'm happy to do so in this situation because it's been pretty fantastic. And as long as we're staying on the pitching side, I'd like to get your impressions of what Neil Allen has done so far this season, because I think we all know about the changeup and his. We heard about it in spring training. He's trying to get everyone to throw the changeup more, and not just the opposite-handed hitters as an out pitch, but righty on righty, lefty on lefty, just throwing it more. So, what are your impressions of what we've seen from the pitching staff, and how we think that relates to Neil Allen so far?
I like the way he looks in the dugout. I had the feeling this question would come up sooner or later in the first couple of weeks of the season. So the last game I was at, I was sitting on the third base side, and I watched this guy during the game. He watches. I mean, you talk about engaged in a baseball game. Neil Allen is watching, analyzing, and discussing every single pitch, not just that the Twins throw, but that the other team is throwing also. I think he's talking to hitters as well. I think he's offering advice as a pitching coach to the offense. I've seen him having numerous conversations with guys, again, like Plouffe and Hunter. So I think for certain you can draw a drastic contrast between Rick Anderson and Neil Allen. I think they are two completely different pitching coaches, and I'll take Neil Allen any day.
I think that I would have been happy with anyone not named Rick Anderson in this season. I just could not stand the fact that Gardy kept going back to that well year after year. And I know the Twins didn't have a lot of arms to put out there, but you just weren't seeing any guys really progress, except for maybe Phil Hughes, who I think really moving out of that New York ballpark was a big part of his success in getting some of that confidence back. But I really like what Neil Allen has done, and I think just looking at the dugout and not seeing Rick Anderson is an immediate upgrade. But maybe, Cody, maybe you could talk a little bit more with educated speak about what Neil Allen has done.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough off of just, you know, the small amount of time we've seen him be able to work with these pitchers. I think more of it is going to come as the season progresses and we see more. The guys I'm keeping an eye on are kind of some of those fringe guys, the Kyle Gibsons, the Trevor Mays, those guys that are at the back of our rotation. But, you know, we've talked about earlier in the show, like the strikeout to walk rate of someone like Gibson, hardly striking anyone out and having an ERA under 3. But, I mean, we've seen maybe Gibson overshoot what we expected out of him this year. We've seen positive things out of Mike Pelfrey that I don't think anyone expected. And Pelfrey got a little bit of time to work under Rick Anderson as well. So I think we're seeing enough positive things out of the starters. And we're seeing, you know, we've been praising guys up and down this bullpen for their performances so far this year. So some of it might be Neil Allen. Some of it might be, you know, Everyday Eddie out there as the bullpen coach working with some of these guys. But it's nice to be able to watch a Twins game and not feel not dreading the starter that's out there for the day, or not dreading who they're going to bring in from the bullpen, to have confidence that these guys are going to be able to go out there, have a quality start, to have guys that can pick you up in the bullpen and put up zeros. Is just, you know, that's a much nicer feeling than watching games over the last 3 or 4 years.
Is there any concern with any of you about some of the innings totals that some of these relievers have been racking up early in the season? Or do you think that with these DL stints of guys like, you know, Fiend and Stauffer going down, that there's been enough fresh blood and there's enough arms down in AAA to kind of spell some more of these guys as we get into really the meat of the season here?
Yeah, that's how I feel. I feel like there's plenty of arms. It's going to get even more complicated when Irvin Santana comes back. So everybody's going to throw. All right, everybody's going to get a turn this year, fellas. Let's just let's team effort here, right? You're going to be up, you're going to be down. This guy's going to be shifting here. Fiend's coming back, so it's going to be fluid. And but everybody's going to get to throw. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, definitely. I think
I'm. Go ahead, Cody.
Well, I was just going to say, I think we heard even in spring training, you know, that the someone like Glenn Perkins, Paul Molitor wasn't going to be afraid to use him in multiple inning situations. So those guys that are the hot pitchers out there or just his guys he relies on, he's not going to be afraid to throw them out there to get four outs if he needs to, some situations like that. If we're especially if we're in this race and continue to be in this race for the long haul of this season. And I think, yeah, I mean, we're going to see some guys come in from AAA, some guys hit the DL, which will free up some innings here or there. So I think in the long run, it all kind of evens out.
Okay, and then staying on the pitching side, two more notes I want to get to. Irvin Santana is going down to extended spring training to start working his way back to the big league ball club. Irvin Santana, the Twins' big offseason signing, as you all know, suspended for 80 games for performance-enhancing drugs. And when he comes back, if this team continues to play well, and I'm sure that a healthy and competitive Irvin Santana will go a long way to this team staying competitive. But even so, if this team does find a way to get into postseason contention, then they have to take that Irvin Santana away from them, no matter how successful he's been in that second half of the season.
I guess I didn't know this about the rule. Did you guys know this about the suspension?
Yeah, I do remember this came up once before and with another guy or another team. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. The guy paid his price. I mean, now you're going to penalize both him and the Twins and everybody. You know, I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. Seriously.
I don't know that it's a ridiculous rule. I kind of like it. I think it's just a little bit of added incentive not to do it. It kind of puts a little bit of more bad clout over the guys that are using. But at some level, I do think that you pay your price, you do the time, whatever that fine, whatever that suspension is, and then when you come back, you should be back. But they knew what this rule, it's not, I mean, this is a new rule, I think it was in place last year as well, I believe. It could be new this offseason, but I remember hearing about this when Nelson Cruz got suspended 2 years ago, you know, and he came back, and then there was a lot of griping from players who didn't think that was fair. So that stinks, and it's going to be, if Santana turns out to be lights out, you know, pitches to a 3-something ERA, and then the Twins are rolling towards that postseason, and then you just lose that guy, that could be a tough pill to swallow for a team.
Especially as a pitcher. I mean, a position player you could maybe fill in, he's going to get up four times, but I mean, a starting pitcher, let alone your ace? I mean, this is like triple punishment here, and I hope there probably isn't an appeal process in place, especially in the middle of a season, but there's got to be a way that the Twins could put this under protest.
I don't think there's really anything they could do here. I mean, I don't know.
Let's hope it happens. Let's hope we get to that bridge, huh?
Yeah. Let's hope it's a problem at the end of the season.
That's a problem I would love to have. The other thing I want to talk about on the pitching side is actually a little bit of offensive here. Mike Pelfrey goes out and has himself a day. In addition to having a nice outing against the Pirates pitching, he goes out and collects himself, goes 2-for-2 at the dish.
leading the team in hitting right now. Yep, I mean, he doesn't qualify, but batting
1,000.
His OPS is 2,000. Because his slugging's 1,000 and his on-base percentage is 1,000, so.
There's nobody better in the league right now than Mike Pelfrey.
Uh-huh. They should get him in the lineup tonight. Or they're off.
Absolutely.
Tonight.
Maybe, you know, they're playing American League Ball, I think, tomorrow when they go to Chicago. Maybe Pelfrey's your DH. I mean, why not?
Here's one thing, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because this series with the White Sox in Chicago and then at home against the Red Sox starting on Memorial Day, I think these next six games could be big for the Twins. If they could go, shoot, I mean, I would even take 3-3, I would consider that a victory, but if they could go 4-3, you know, if they get four wins out of this, I mean, I think this next week could be a critical part in the season. I mean, we could be two games up in a week.
I mean, how about this White Sox series? I was looking up the pitching matchups when I was at work today, and I was getting excited because it's our best three versus their best three, I mean, it's I believe it's in Chicago, man, where the ball just flies out of that ballpark. If you make a mistake, you leave it up at all. Hitters can punish it. I mean, you got Phil Hughes and Jeff Samardzija on Friday. You got Chris Sale versus Trevor May on Saturday, and Kyle Gibson versus Jose Quintana on Sunday. I mean, that we got good pitching all 3 days. It should be a lot of fun. With the way the Twins are scoring runs right now, I mean, the White Sox have been hot for the last 2 weeks. I mean, this has the makings, I think, of a great series, and the kind of series I think that Twins fans have, that kind of a challenge series, something the Twins really haven't had a chance to really feel excited about in 4 years.
Yeah, and the Twins tend to play pretty well in Chicago, which is nice. They've actually, though, been playing a little bit. Their last 10 games, they're 7-3, and that's after losing their last two. So they were on quite a little hot streak there. The Twins are 6-4 in their last 10, but they've won two in a row. So I think it's going to be some good baseball in Chicago. Definitely, you talked about the pitching matchups, Paul. There's some good pitchers that are going to be on the hill for both teams. Those first two games in particular, I'm really excited to watch the Hughes-Samardzija matchup. And, Trevor May and Chris Sale, the Twins, I think, caught Sale at a good time earlier in the season, didn't they? And kind of beat him up a little bit.
They tattooed him.
Yeah, so I'm sure he's going to have a little bit of an extra oomph in his delivery, trying to rebound after that outing. So should be fun, definitely fun to watch over the long weekend.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, this has all the makings of just about everything I could want from a series. I mean, you're looking at and Joe Mauer always seems to hit well in Chicago at the Cell. That's a place where even Joe Mauer, maybe he's going to stay with this little hot streak and put another one out of the park. I think he's slugging almost 500 at games at the U.S. Cellular Park. So, I mean, that's exciting for me. I mean, it's so much fun to have good teams playing each other. I love the way the rotations have lined up here. And although Chris Sale has not been fantastic the last couple of weeks, I'm just excited for this series the way I haven't been in a long time.
You know, we talked a lot, especially over the winter, just about the familiarity between the AL Central. I mean, they play each other so much. And I think, we were talking about it in that it works to our disadvantage. Well, I don't know. Against guys like Sale and even some of the guys on the Tigers and the Royals, the Twins have shown up.
Yeah, and I think that when you're facing some of those top-level pitchers like a Chris Sale, and even though, maybe a pitcher like Chris Sale, he gets comfortable, he knows where he can get you out and where he can't when he's facing these batters again and again, year after year, 19 times a year these teams play each other. But I also think you kind of get some confidence building as a player because you see those pitches. The more chances you get to see those, the more it trends in the batter's favor. And the way the Twins just beat up on Chris Sale last time, I think everybody's got to feel like they can hit this guy. And I think that, 90% of this game is mental. It bodes well for the Twins. And if Trevor May can continue to limit those free passes and hopefully get into the sixth or seventh inning, I like our chances in that game, even in Chicago.
One reason why the bullpen has been so good and productive is because I don't think we've had a starter go 8 innings in, or maybe even, I can't remember the last time a starter went 7 innings. Molitor seems to have fallen into a rhythm of, 6, 6 1/3, maybe 7 at the most. But starters aren't going much beyond that. At least not here early in the season. That could change.
I wonder how many of the guys, though, he would trust going that far anyway. Hughes certainly would at some point, but he hasn't pitched the best. But some of the younger guys, I feel like he doesn't have the confidence in them yet, to go that far. And I don't know. I don't know if I would. I feel like any time we're getting Mike Pelfrey through 6 innings and he's pitching like he has been, that it's like, all right, hand it over to the bullpen. We got guys out there that can take us home.
Yeah, Yeah, and why wouldn't? I mean, it's been a successful recipe. I mean, let's face it. In most of these games, the Twins have either been ahead or been in the game in that sixth, seventh inning. We Paul, you were talking about it before. We had some battle bruises early on with guys like Boyer, but it's been fun to watch them heal and really become that 6-7, and then 8, the bridge to Perkins. I mean, it's just been working so well.
Yeah, it's been good, and I think when you look at the Twins' record, even though they're going on the road this week, the Twins have, for the first time in a long time, have also been fantastic at home. They're 14-6 so far this season at home, thanks in a large part to that fantastic 11-game homestand that they have. They're 9-11 on the road, very respectful, or very good record for being on the road, only 2 games below 500, and with a big weekend here, we could see that them climb back up to the plus side there, and man, I feel like everywhere you look with this team, there's something to like, there's something to be excited about, and I mean, I know I keep saying this over and over again, but it's so much more fun when you have something to be excited about.
And now imagine getting back your ace. Your number one is coming back in a few weeks. I mean, he's not coming off injury like Verlander or anything like that. I mean, you're getting an angry, something to prove, paid Irvin Santana coming, in the beginning of June, right when things are starting to heat up in more ways than one. That's big. That's huge.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. One thing I am curious to see that I didn't, I don't know if you guys watched the game the other day. It looked like Kurt Suzuki took one right off the hand. I was surprised. Yeah. I thought for sure there was going to be a roster move with Pinto coming up here on the off day and getting him behind the plate this weekend. Oh. And I really hope that Zook's hand is okay, because that he's been super clutch, continues to get those two out hits seeming miraculously. He even threw a runner out the other day, man.
He's thrown a few out.
It's exciting. So
yeah, I don't know how much the Twins want Pinto behind the plate. Suzuki can go back there with one hand before they want him back, Pinto back there again.
But how much longer can they wait to bring up to Pinto? Do you know what's he been doing down in AAA since the last time we talked?
I could see a swap between Herman and Pinto. Couldn't you see that? Couldn't you just see him switching spots for like a week or two?
I mean, I guess
Herman already down.
No, Herman's still with the team. Pretty sure he's still on the bench. My biggest concern is that I haven't got any real reports of what's been going on with Josmil Pinto behind the plate. So I don't know how he's been progressing, because you remember last season, Glenn Perkins had some not so flattering things to say about Josmil Pinto after he got sent back to AAA. And so despite the fact that he's been hitting the ball well down in AAA, showing a little bit of that pop, regaining some of that wow factor that the Twins, that he's known for, that carries him. If he can't be even a, just below average receiver behind the plate, if he can't call a game, it's going to be hard for those pitchers to trust him and likewise to then trust their stuff with him behind the dish.
Do you think, and I've been thinking about this, I've been thinking about Pinto, do you think there's a language barrier there? A lot of the Twins starting pitchers speak English. Perkins is another one. His English is not good. They're used to working with Suzuki. I think that just the Spanish to English language barrier could be an issue that maybe we should talk about, addressing if it's not already being done so with Pinto.
Yeah, it's tough to know the defensive side of the ball, like just looking at raw numbers and not having like any kind of reports out of Rochester yet. He has like a 980 fielding percentage back there, and he only has one pass ball. He's thrown out 29% of runners, he's only started 23 games at catcher and 9 at designated hitters. So he's getting some work behind the plate anyway. He has 6 home runs, I think, or 4 home runs, 6 doubles. So 22 extra base hits. His OPS is 781.
Isn't there anybody else? What's the other catching options down there? Because I just feel like we've gone through this with Pinto already. Isn't there another option?
The other guys that would most Eric likely Fryer. Be considered options are not at AAA. You know, the other guys we're waiting on are lower levels, like the Stuart Turner types. But again, he's considered more offensive as well. And it continues to work on the defensive side of the ball.
Eric Fryer is down there at AAA. If you need to call up, you know, if something were to happen to Herman and you needed that, somewhat capable defensive backstop to be your backup catcher, Eric Fryer is there. They can find room for him on the 40 man. And then if you have to wait him for something.
Fryer's been the best hitter at AAA. He's got a 349 batting average and a 827 OPS. So he's actually been doing some good things for them on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think he even had a couple of stints at DH for the Redbirds down there. So, yeah, I mean, maybe you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't mind having Herman on the bench right now because the Twins have had some guys like Escobar, like the impossible Eduardo Nunez, you know, the guys coming off the bench that have been getting either lucky or just being clutch. And so Chris Herman hasn't been that exposed, you know, and now with Rosario and Hicks up, when one of them is not in the game, you kind of have that, you still have a little bit of pop and power coming off the bench. So I'm not too worried about hiding that, you know, a guy like Eric or Chris Herman on the, you know, on the bench there.
Yeah, one other interesting thing that just happened in this series, I don't know if you guys saw this, it's kind of been getting a little bit of national attention, but Nolasco gave up the bomb in his start the other night, and the ball actually bounced once and landed in a boat that was parked by the river there in Pittsburgh, and a fan walking by just hops in the boat to grab the ball, and the people that the boat belongs to were in a bar somewhere around the stadium watching the game, and they got angry, that someone hopped in their boat, first of all, but also took the baseball. So they're like calling for that they should be the rightful owners of the ball, because it's like someone hopped in, like if someone hopped in your car and grabbed something out of it, per se. So definitely, it was a huge home run, but quite an interesting fiasco that resulted because of the long home run.
It's like a riddle. It's like a riddle. How did the baseball player hit a ball into the river and it not get wet?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very good.
And I think then, I don't have any other Twins news that I wanted to talk about. Anyone else have any where they want to go?
Don't you have some like maritime law information you can drop on us here, Paul? You're like, what's the ruling?
I'm pretty sure that it's illegal to enter into someone else's boat, but it's like a guy who drives a convertible. If you leave valuables in your car with the top down, you should expect that someone's going to reach in and take what they want.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, the only other thing I had mentioned on the outline is Target Field is making a change with the plastic that they're using for basically all beer cups, nacho trays, straws aren't made from plastic anymore at Target Field. They've always tried to go green with stuff throughout the ballpark. You know, they're reutilizing the rainwater and recycling programs and stuff like that. But they're now made from like combustible materials. So when you buy
not combustible, but compostable.
Yes, yeah.
And that's
is that a
you don't want it. You don't want your beer starting on fire, Paul?
Yeah. No. I like my beers ice cold. Not fired on the grill. But the compostable plasticware is something that we've had out here at Safeco Field since I've been out here and all over the Seattle area. And at Safeco, they pretty much only have two waste receptacles. You have recycling and you have compost. And I believe like 90% of the waste that's produced at Safeco Field has either gone into compost or into recycling. So that's pretty awesome that they're also bringing that to Target Field now.
Yeah, can you tell the difference in the cup? Does it still feel like...
No, it still feels exactly like a plastic cup. Okay. I mean, you'd think like, oh, what is this? Is it going to be like some kind of weird paper cup? And if I don't drink my beer fast enough, that it's going to get soggy and start leaking. But no, it feels like plastic. It looks like plastic cup. If you didn't know it was compostable, because it says it's compostable, you would have no idea. That's the power of science.
And thank you for that report. That was insightful and helpful. And I don't know what we'd do without you sometimes.
Well,
out there in hippie land in Seattle.
Yeah, we also have a ban on plastic bags. So that's a thing. No plastic bags at the grocery store.
Yeah, you shouldn't have plastic bags. I agree. No, I think we should all outlaw them.
Well, there we go. There's words of wisdom to ponder over while we step away from the microphone. What would you be forced to do if you no longer had that stash of plastic bags underneath your kitchen sink or in your hallway closet? I'm sure.
Thanks for sticking with us, everybody. We're going to go now to one of our favorite segments each week. We do Hitter and Pitcher of the Week. We've got some good candidates this week, I feel. We've talked about a lot of them on both sides, both for hitter and pitcher. All right, I'm just going to toss it to you, Paul. My tongue is all tied in a knot. Give me some thoughts on Hitter and Pitcher of the Week, please, pal.
Okay, so for Pitcher of the Week, three candidates. I'll start with the guy that I've got to just keep propping up this week after all the bad things I said about him. In the last week, we've seen Blaine Boyer give up just one earned run in his 4 2/3 inning, a walk and two Ks. Phil Hughes, 7 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 3 Ks, and a walk. And Glenn Perkins, 4 innings, 1 earned run, 5 Ks, and just a single walk in his very impressive outings. So who do you think deserves the pitcher of the week?
I think I'll go first, Cody. I'm just going to go with Perkins quick because I mean, he's leading the major leagues in saves. He's been perfect. He's done everything that Molitor's asked him to do. And he's a big reason why the Twins, are where they are right now in the win loss record.
Yeah, I we always lean towards the starting pitchers, but none of them really stood out this week. I mean, obviously Hughes' numbers were pretty good. One of his better starts is he starts coming back to the pack, maybe back to some of the Phil Hughes we saw last year. Boyer has been impressive and been able to come in and do a whole inning, do parts of an inning, stuff like that. But I agree with you, Jay. I think Perkins should get it this week. I was leaning more towards a bullpen guy, and out of the two bullpen guys, Perkins' numbers are definitely there. Just with how dominant he's looked here at the end of games.
Yeah, and I have to agree. I'll make a clean sweep for Glenn Perkins. He leads all of baseball in the last week with saves, 4 for 4 in save opportunities. And has considerably, that 5-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio over that same span. Very impressed with what Perkins done, not just this past week, but throughout the season. I think it's only fitting that when we have an opportunity to highlight the strong play, especially of someone like Glenn Perkins, who if the team doesn't play well, he's not going to get all those chances to go out there. So I think it's an easy call here to give this one to Glenn Perkins. So Cody, why don't you tell us about some of the guys on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, we kind of have some guys a little bit all over the place. Brian Dozier had a big week. He only had 5 hits in 20 at-bats, but 3 of those hits were 4 home runs. He's getting walked a ton. He had 5 walks, so his on-base percentage was high. He scored 6 runs as he it starts crawling back up that runs leaderboard in the American League that we saw him finish 2nd last year to Mike Trout. So pretty decent week there for Dozier with the combination of the power, the on-base scoring runs. Trevor Plouffe, who we talked a little bit about earlier in the show, he had 6 hits in 22 at-bats, had a home run and a couple doubles to his credit. Joe Mauer, we talked about that big home run that that Mauer hit in last night's extra inning affair. So he had that on his record, and he actually led the team in hits this week with 7 hits in 24 at-bats. He knocked in 5 runs. He had that 3-run RBI single also in the Pittsburgh series. So pretty good stretch of games there in Pittsburgh, and he scored 4 runs. Another guy just to throw in the mix, Danny Santana had 5 hits in 23 at-bats, had a triple, a double, but he's also doing a little bit of something on the base paths. He stole a couple bases here in the last week. So, yeah, they looking at all those and all that numbers, which way are you leaning, Jay?
I'm going to go with Joe. And I'm going to go with Joe because I think this is going to be the first of a string of weeks that Joe's going to be my selection for hitter of the week. I think Joe's about to lock in and get hot. I think we might see a couple, a little bunch of home runs here, a little shotgun blast of home runs. The RBIs, you know, as the weather gets better and warmer in Minnesota and in Minnesota and elsewhere, I think Joe's going to heat up also. I think he's just going to continue to put up these kind of numbers moving forward. I think he's going to hit over 300 for the season. Hopefully the power comes. But, yeah, so anyway, Joe, for the first in what I predict to be a string of Mauer votes for me.
Well, I would really like to agree with you. I think you're a little bit optimistic on your projection for Joe Mauer the rest of the season, but what he did this last week, hard not to vote for him with that game-running home run. But, Cody, you probably forgot the most impressive performance of the week. We mentioned it earlier.
Brother.
Mike Pelfrey, 2-for-2, batting 1,000.
Man.
And that's almost enough to take it from Joe Mauer, but that game-winning home run in the 13th inning tips the scale in Mauer's favor. So, Mike Pelfrey, a tip of the hat to you, but I'm going with Joe Mauer.
Well, I was going to go with Mr. Dozier. I know I'm already outvoted, but I like the power with the three long balls out of his 5 hits. I like he's been able to get walks and get on base,
yeah,
and that's led to some runs as well. So I thought it was a pretty impressive performance this week from Dozier, but Mauer did some good things as well. So Mauer gets the win, but Dozier gets my vote.
Okay, so then moving on from the hitter and pitcher of the week, we're going to go now to Jay Korn's favorite sound effect, down in the pond.
That was good.
We're going to take a look at a budding superstar down in the Twins minor leagues, a guy who we've seen on prospect lists, I feel like, for the last half decade, kind of waiting for him to just emerge since he signed with the Twins as a 16-year-old out of Germany. And, of course, we're talking about the Chattanooga Lookouts, Max Kepler, who sees a lot of time at first base but can play all 3 outfield positions. In addition to having a mother who is a ballerina and a father who is a professional athlete as well, it's finally great to see him kind of making some of those strides this year that we've all been waiting for. You look at his batting line, .344 with the .390 on base, slugging .548. That's, you know, a .938 OPS. I mean, that is just impressive what he's been doing down there. I mean, he's got 13 extra base hits, I think, in 25 games. So just,
yep.
I finally feel like he's starting to put together that full package. I mean, and for him, a guy, he's 6'4", 205. He's got that big frame, you know, hits from the left side. I mean, I just, there's so much to like here, so much to project on, and we're finally seeing him really put that together, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, a couple other things, too. I mean, you mentioned just his sheer size out there, but he's shown a lot of speed, too. He has a few triples to his credit this year. He's 5 out of 6 on steal attempts as well, so he can get that his big frame moving and do some things with the speed, which is why, you know, he's also been successful out there in the outfield. If you look at his numbers, that .344 average and his on-base percentage is only, you know, 46 points higher. So one thing that it would be nice to see out of him would probably be some more walks. He only has 7 walks this season in 93 at-bats. So it'd be nice to see that number tick up a little bit. To when you're hitting 344, though, you probably just want to keep swinging the bat. If you're feeling good and the ball's looking that big to you, you probably just want to keep swinging. So only has 9 strikeouts, which is pretty mind-boggling in that amount of at-bats, that closing in on 100 at-bats for the season. But to be in a lineup that includes the likes of, you know, top prospects, Miguel Sano, Byron Buxton, Adam Brett Walker's down there, Stuart Turner, Jorge Polanco, to be the guy that's the standout guy with that team right now is pretty killer, especially when he's a full 2 years younger than all the other hitters in the Southern League this year. He's been younger than hitters at every stop of the way. So to finally put it together, as you were saying, Paul, after, you know, he struggled at different levels for different times. As he's moved up the ladder, he had to repeat Elizabethton, and he's slowly been working his way. They even started him in Fort Myers this season for a handful of games. So it's like you said, Paul, he's been around. He's been in the system. There's been a lot of hope surrounding him, you know, that he would emerge into something more, and I think we're finally seeing him take steps in the right direction. But there's going to continue to be things for him to work on as well.
Yeah, Max Kepler came up on the broadcast. I mean, I've been watching. I mean, with Bert gone, I can tolerate the television much better. but Max Kepler came up on the broadcast the other night, and basically what Dick Bremer said was that we're not the only ones that are taking notice of what Kepler's doing down there. There's a buzz within the organization. There's a buzz within the front office that maybe this is the year that we see Kepler put it all together. And really, for Kepler, you know, the feeling from that I got anyway was that the sky's the limit for this kid. I mean, he could be excellent. I didn't realize he was even drafted at 16. I think Dick might have even said 18, so he was probably wrong. So it's even younger than I thought. He did say he was so it's going to be interesting to watch Kepler develop. I mean, that would, you know, explains why he's been on, you know, all these prospect lists for so damn long. It could see Kepler in at Target Field maybe before all said and done in September, huh?
Yeah, he was in that same class as Sano, right? In international signings that same off season. So those guys have kind of come up together through the system. And that was the same summer the Twins drafted Dozier, I believe, as well, was all in that same near the end of that Bill Smith era. So maybe some good things coming out of I had written a post about that earlier this season. You know, maybe, you know, as we look back on the Bill Smith era, there were plenty of negatives with trades and decisions he made. You know, there might be some good things coming down the pipeline here in the next few years that could shine a little bit of light on his era as the general manager.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Smith did some things right. And although those things may be few and far between and may be highlighted by that Miguel Sano signing and the renovations going on down with the Fort Myers at Hammond Stadium, or CenturyLink Complex, I think it's being called now. But yeah, it was not all bad, as much as I would love for that to be the case. He did do some things right. And with a lot of these general manager and front office moves, you don't really get to see the full effect of those moves for 4, 5, yep, 6, or even 7 years later, because it takes so long for those guys that you're drafting, for those player development moves, to pay any kind of dividends. And so you're almost, you know, you're definitely riding someone else's coattails, unless you've been in the job for any length of time. So yeah, Max Kepler, somebody to watch. And if you had not heard his name before, if you'd not been paying attention to what's been going on, now is the time to start taking note of Max Kepler. Because as Jay said, once you get a hitter at a double A level, it's not out of the question that you may see him up the way we saw Jorge Polanco last season, get a couple games up, or be a September call-up at the end of the season here. If the Twins need that bat or that speed or that defense, mm-hmm, off the bench, as they hopefully have a chance to make a playoff push late in the season.
And he's already on the 40-man roster because of where they – when they signed him, they had to add him. And, I mean, he's played to the last two seasons in the Arizona Fall League, so the teams thought highly of him. So I definitely think it could be a situation where maybe it's we see a few guys that are off of that Chattanooga roster, Polanco, Sano, Buxton, Kepler. Maybe there's a – quadruple group that gets called up in September, and if the Twins are still in the pennant push, these guys have been part of multiple playoff races in the minor leagues so far, so they have some experience in some of those pressure situations. So could be nice to have add maybe some surprise pop to that lineup at the end of the year.
Not to mention that'd be so much fun. People would go out. Well, they would go out. They would buy tickets. You know, I mean, if you're going to have all those guys making their major league debuts at around the same time in September, you know, whether the Twins are close or not close, I mean, that could really get some buzz going.
Yeah, and let's not forget about guys down there on the other side of the ball, led by the budding Uber prospect Jose Berrios. Also, I think realistically, if the Twins are looking to get him an extra couple of starts or some work there at the end of the season, he's been just very impressive down with Chattanooga this season. So that's another name that at Double A he made a start, Triple A last year. I mean, you never know. They could come calling at any time for these guys, and with the number of guys the Twins have already seen on the DL this season, you just never know. I mean, you can't just keep calling up Doug Bernier over and over again. Eventually, got to call up somebody with some upside. So then we'll move from Jay's favorite sound effect to my favorite segment, beers from around the world. and this week, I'm not drinking a beer from around the world, but I did in honor of my brother's nuptials and his honeymoon down in Nolens. I'm drinking an Abita Amber brewed down in Louisiana. As they like to say, this is a beautiful brown, very dark brown ale. It has like a toasty, biscuity, malty flavor, kind of caramely with a nice hop presence and almost has a little bit of spice to it. But I really think that Eric would enjoy that biscuity, bready feel and taste that it has. So, Eric, I would say congratulations on your wedding and hopefully you get a chance to enjoy some Abita beers while you're down in New Orleans.
That's a good one. I'm jealous. I am drinking something with a little bit of sentimental value myself. I have a buddy who I work with. His name is Brad. He just got married. Also just got married, except he moved to Philadelphia. They packed up and drove halfway across the country last week. But a couple of his home brews were left in the red currant fridge after his departure. So I took them. I did. I throw myself on the mercy of the court. I took the three home brews that were left, and that's what I'm drinking tonight.
Much like the guy who lost a baseball from his boat, Brad left those beers in a communal fridge, and he has no right to claim them.
Exactly.
Very nice. Almost like a ball in a boat in a river. I'm having a PBR for Paul, just in delicious. Honor of you, sir. It was cheap for Memorial Day weekend, so it was cold and tastes good every once in a while. So there we go.
And with that in mind, for the vets, as you guys are out there probably listening to this podcast over Memorial Day weekend. Please do take a chance to think about what Memorial Day means. It's not just a day for barbecue and drinking beer, but also to remember the sacrifice made by all the service members in the U.S. services across the world today. Your parents, your grandparents, generations, all the service members that have given us the freedom and the greatness that we have in America. So make sure to give a little thought and say a little thanks for those guys out there putting their lives in harm's way.
And then go have some barbecue and beer.
Yes, and then have those barbecues and beer.
Yes.
So with that, then, we're going to move around the league and start off with a little bit of sad news. I'm sure you've all heard about it already. But Mr. Naked Batting Practice himself, Mike Redmond, was fired from his coaching position in Miami. And then, in an even stranger, weirder twist of fate, the Miami Marlins GM, Greg Jennings, hires himself to be the manager.
Just straight. Well, for another oddity of it was that the Marlins came within like one out of being no hit by Shelby Miller earlier in the day. And then a couple hours after the game, Redmond was gone. And this was after a weird year where, I mean, a lot of people have had high expectations for the Marlins at the beginning of the season. And they played poorly at the beginning, and there was rumors that Redmond was going to be fired. And then they played a little bit better for a while, and so the owner was like, oh, no, we're not getting rid of him. And then they got rid of him. Definitely strange. So right now the Marlins are currently paying three managers. They're paying Ozzie Guillen still. They're paying Mike Redmond, and now they're paying, obviously, their new GM that has become just an M without the G.
Yeah, so very, very strange things going on down in Miami. I don't think we've heard the last of that strange scenario as it plays itself out as we move into the rest of this season. Also in the news, we're seeing this pick up more. The scouts are tracking Ben Revere for a potential trade from the Phillies there. Something I talked about maybe the Twins should have been looking at, maybe bringing Benny back earlier in the season. That's probably something I wouldn't advocate for now, which maybe shows that maybe Terry Ryan's a little bit wiser than I am. I don't know. I feel like Ben Revere is not a fantastic baseball player, but he's got great contact skills. He's still got that speed. He can get those stolen bases. And right now he's I'm saying he's being wasted a little bit playing corner outfield for the Phillies. So I definitely think a team looking for that prototypical leadoff guy, Ben Revere should be able to be available, and it shouldn't cost you an arm and a leg to pick up Ben Revere. But yeah, the Phillies have shown that they are maybe have no idea how to value players with what they're expecting in a trade and how much they pay players and how to manage a front office in general. So maybe I shouldn't get too far ahead of myself there.
Yeah, and the Phillies are not a good baseball team. The Phillies are going to – I see a fire sale going down there in Philadelphia. Hamels is going to go. A couple other guys, maybe even Howard. I heard they were talking about Baseball Tonight or something like that about a Howard-Hamels package. That could be a possibility.
That's the only way they could get someone to take Howard is if they got Hamels in the deal as well. They would have to eat a ton of that salary to dump that Ryan Howard contract. So
see, those guys, Revere, Hamels, and Howard, possibly all three of them leaving before the trade deadline. The Phillies are just not good.
Yeah, and Revere, it can't even be a free agent until 2018. Be arbitration eligible next year. So a team trading for him would still have some decent control. He's getting paid a little over $4 million, so you wonder how expensive he could get, especially with the skill set that he offers. I mean, obviously he was in the batting race last season and he's hit over 300 the last two seasons. And was pretty close his last season in Minnesota. So led the National League in hits last season. So some teams might be looking for those skills, those stolen bases and stuff like that. So, the type of player that Revere isn't going to age well. You know, with that game relying on speed, that's going to diminish over time. So he's going to have to find other ways to be successful.
And, you know, we're talking about the Twins at 23 wins, six games above 500. You know, that's pretty good. We got to be pretty happy. But, you know, on the flip side of the coin, there are some bad baseball teams this year. The A's are bad. The Marlins are bad. The Rockies, the Brewers, I'm looking at the standings here. Even the Indians. I mean, all of those teams are going to be significantly below 500. They're going to be out of the running before the 4th of July. It's a lot of cities. It's a lot of cities. A disappointing season for the Blue Jays. So for the surprises,
I don't think the Blue Jays are out of it by any means. I think the Blue Jays have some of their starting pitching has not pitched. You look at Drew Hutchinson has not pitched up to the level that maybe a lot of people expected, and that I definitely expected from him. I think the Blue Jays still have a lot of fight with them left in them, and their offense has the ability to score a lot of runs. Chris Colabello getting some playing time there, continuing that hot start of the season. That's been a lot of fun to watch. I actually picked him up in fantasy baseball. Imagine that. Chris Colabello being a fantasy commodity that someone would want to get. But he's been hot, and he continues to be hot. So it's exciting to watch that. I mean, I feel great for the guy. And another guy on a crazy hot streak. How about Bryce Harper? We got to talk about Bryce Harper. He is going otherworld. The last 2 weeks, he is playing at a level that we've never seen of, and a level that maybe we've been waiting for the last 5 years. I mean, we kept thinking, like, oh, I'm waiting for Bryce Harper to put it together. I mean, he came up and there was that Bryce Harper, Mike Trout debate, and then Mike Trout just hit that other level. And I wonder, are we finally seeing Bryce Harper take that step and be other level? And in addition to just raking at the plate, he's also being very patient, leads the National Leagues in walks right now. Just totally impressive.
And he's the same age as Buxton and Kepler and Sano, those other guys we were talking about. He's the same age. So he's doing this. Yes. Oh, go ahead, Jay.
But I was just going to say, and then Harper goes out and gets himself ejected in the first inning of a game over the weekend or a couple days ago or earlier this week. But on top of that, you know, I don't know how many home runs it's up to now during the month of May, 7 or 9 or whatever it is. There's been 3 or 4 that have either been caught at the wall or been really long doubles.
He had a shot in Miami that was like off of the top of the wall in center field, and it ended up going for a double. But I mean, you couldn't hit the ball any further in any park and have that one stay in. Just been mashing, man. Once again, Bryce Harper is a must-watch. If you're watching on MLB TV, I got a player alert on Bryce Harper, so every time he comes up, I'm switching over. That's fun. The one thing I don't understand with Washington, I don't know what's going on with those chocolate syrup bass after the game. That's just weird.
There was a story on NBC that Hardball talked today about that, or linked by them there. And apparently the clubhouse guys are not very happy with about the process they have to go through to get that out of the jerseys. Is it takes like 9 washes or something crazy like that to get the chocolate stains off the jerseys. They use multiple chemicals on it and it is a pain, but they said it's worth it as long as the Nationals, keep winning.
Yeah, and
they started off slow as well. The Nationals started off the equal record. Remember, the Twins had that horrible first week or two of the season. The Nationals did the same exact thing, if you remember, and they've bounced back nicely. So I've seen a few of the Nationals games, but those pitchers, Gio Gonzalez, even Scherzer, Pfister, all have been underwhelming. All of them. Strasburg.
Yeah, the Nationals are still at the top of their division. They've clawed their way back 24-17, just overtook the Mets yesterday, I believe. They're very hot the last 10 days. I mean, they're 8-2 in their last 10, and I think 12-4 over the last 2 weeks. So just, I mean, it's impressive. They're finally putting it together. And like Jay said, their starting pitching has not been lights out like we expected it to be. I mean, it's really just been the Bryce Harper show. And sometimes when you do what Bryce Harper's done, that's sometimes one guy, that's enough, which is pretty crazy to talk about in baseball.
Denard Span is having a great year. Andrew Zimmerman, I think his first name is Andrew Zimmerman, Ryan Zimmerman is having a great year. Desmond has like 14 errors in the field or something crazy like that, but at least he's contributing offensively. The Nationals are still looking for a rhythm. I kind of, you know, a little bit like the Twins in a way. You know, I mean, the Nationals have that one guy. You know, the Twins don't really have that one guy yet. But both teams, I think, are looking to find their footing a little.
Any other league news that you guys want to talk about? I know Josh Hamilton, I think, went out, started his rehab starts with Texas since we last got together. And I think that he is within a week of joining the Texas club.
Yeah, it sounds like, he's been playing a little at AA and AAA and has had some decent hitting games there. They're going to give him some more time just to kind of get, I mean, it's kind of like his spring training, you know, almost getting reacclimated. getting back out there and getting some things done. So, another story, a guy I hope can find some success again after, you know, overcoming the stuff that he overcame and having that relapse during his divorce this offseason is never, you don't want, you never want to see stuff like that happening, especially with the talent that he has shown. So it'll be someone to watch here in the second half of the season, and hopefully he can get back to playing baseball and get his life back on track a little bit.
Yeah, good luck, Josh Hamilton. The Rangers certainly need him. Prince Fielder and Elvis Andrews have just disappeared this year. The pitching has just been decimated. The Rangers are in trouble. So hopefully,
yeah. Who is their second baseman? What's his name? Roughened Odor. After a great 2014, where he came out of nowhere, just stumbled out of the gates big time. I think I saw they sent him down to AAA.
Yeah.
So, and then, they lost. Darvish, that was a big killer to them. I think that really killed their shot of contention this year. But Texas is they're bad this year. If it wasn't for those Oakland A's managing to implode night after night after night, they'd be cellar dwelling all alone out there in the AL West.
Very cool.
And, last thing I want to talk about was my preseason favorite, the Cincinnati Reds. A little bit disappointing, 4 games under .500. Cueto, having an average kind of year, nothing. That lineup.
He's a second half pitcher, Jay.
Yeah.
Watch out.
We'll see. But I feel like that lineup hasn't clicked. I've been kind of following the Reds a little bit ever since we made our preseason predictions. And I just feel like that lineup hasn't clicked yet. Phillips hasn't hit well. Jay Bruce hasn't hit well. Votto's been okay. Votto hits 3 home runs one game, and then you don't hear from him again for 2 weeks. So I think the Reds have.
Frazier has been doing some good things for them. Yeah. And
doing well.
Mesoraco has been dealing with a hip injury. He had quite the breakout season last year, even made the All-Star team. And I know people were expecting him to be one of the top-tier hitting catchers here this season, but dealing with a hip thing that has put him out. So I think they've just, been missing some pieces or having some guys be a little underwhelmed.
One thing I want to talk about is the reemergence of Tim Lincecum this season.
Yeah.
Last night on Wednesday, we saw the freak go out, pitch 7 shutout innings against the Dodgers in that very potent lineup. Timmy Lincecum, I believe, is currently 4-2 on the year with a 2.08 ERA. Are you kidding me? I mean, he's got 36 strikeouts, only given up one home run this year. Does have 21 walks. So, I mean, it's not without a little bit of caution here, but...
He looks good. Did you see that one start where he kept falling down?
Like
3 starts ago, he couldn't find his footing, and he would stumble and just throw the ball wherever. And some of them even ended up kind of going over the plate, but that was a weird start. But yeah, for how dominant he was for multiple seasons in a row, it's nice to see a little bit of something out of him. I mean, we're not seeing like the eye-popping strikeout rates that we saw when he was winning those Cy Young years. Definitely someone to keep an eye on out there in the National League, but sometimes some of those games out there in the NL West are way past a teacher's bedtime.
Yeah, oh, you Central time zoners.
how Eric's been following A-Rod for Eric's just got this thing for A-Rod. Well, I kind of just have this thing for Tim Lincecum. I've been following him since he first came. Since he was first drafted by the Giants, with the long hair and the goth look and just that, I don't care kind of attitude. The guy has 2 Cy Young Awards. Okay, he's got 3 World Series rings, 4. He's done what everything the Giants have asked him to do. He's had some off the field issues that I think that he's put behind him. He's gone to the bullpen. He stayed with the team. He wants to be in San Francisco. So now it reminds me a little bit of Greg Maddux. And here's why. Just hold on a second. Here's why. Because later in his career, Maddux developed, he developed different pitches. He developed different ways of attacking pitchers. And I feel like Lincecum's doing that now as well, and it's great to see him having success.
The main difference here is that Greg Maddux had pinpoint laser control, could put the ball wherever he wanted. And 21 walks from Tim Lincecum and 8 starts, that is not laser pinpoint control by any means. So
needs a laser.
I definitely can understand where you can kind of see this seems like he's maybe reinventing himself a little bit, learning how to pitch with some lesser stuff with that reduced speed. But let's not go all the way to Greg Maddux here. One question I want to do before I get you out of here, guys. This weekend I'm going to be going on the Baseball PhD podcast. And since I live out of the area and I don't get a chance to go to Target Field nearly as much as you guys do, I would like each of you to just tell me what your favorite thing about Target Field is.
Okay, I'll go first, I guess. My favorite thing about Target Field is there's really not a bad seat. I mean, you could get, you know, whatever ticket you manage to scrounge up, you know, if you want to upgrade. I mean, and the good seats are really good. If you're sitting on that first kind of level by the dugout, those are great seats. The skyline is fantastic. You know, it's just the din. I like to call it the din. I tell my wife the din of the ballpark is great at Target Field, even when it's not jammed. So just the just the view of the field, the view of the game. You really can't beat it.
I like not only, I mean, I was kind of going to go off of what Jay said just about, you know, being able to walk around the concourse area and all the different vibes you can get from the different bars or restaurants or whatever. And I think going off of that, though, is just, you know, being able to, you know, find all the different food options. They've always been on top of, you know, adding new things, adjusting the menus at different places and bringing in stuff so your experience at the ballpark isn't just necessarily about the baseball, but it can be, you can bring people there that don't know anything about baseball and say, you know, let's go out to the ballpark. We'll have some fun. There's a ton of good beverages to choose from. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of food to choose from. You're able to bring people from, you know, all over Minnesota, North Dakota, that whole area that feeds into Twins territory and be able to meet up at a game and just enjoy the experience. And now we finally have some good baseball to watch again as well.
And, you know, yeah, I'll add one other thing, that the accessibility with the parking ramps and the light rail and the bus and to walk and the bars and restaurants that are right near the stadium, all of those things, getting to the ballpark and things to do once you're downtown, and just the ambiance of it all, the breweries and the light rail and the new green line, all
yeah,
the
and weekend. That's where I was going to go. As an out-of-towner who every time I come in, I'm always commuting in, the accessibility of the ballpark, and especially the way it's kind of nestled into the city there, they've really done a lot to those bars and restaurants like you were talking about that are right by the game. You know, you can make a whole day of it. You know, the game might not start till 7 o'clock, but you can show up for noon and grab a bite to eat, have a couple of drinks, talk baseball with your buddies, and just get that whole experience enjoying the area around the stadium. The plaza is beautiful. They've got all the statues and stuff to check out before you even get into the stadium. And so for me, just that the way that the city has really integrated with the stadium is my favorite thing about the stadium.
Cool. That was fun.
All right, then that's going to do it for us on the Talk to Contact podcast. Thanks for sticking us in your ear holes. And if you enjoyed the show, tell a friend, tell a friend's friend, tell a friend's mom. Been jumping over fire pits just to get to your door. I know you've got a man, yeah, I know what that involves. He's so much greater, he's such a king. Me, I'm just a blue collar working with my bro in bathroom stalls. Or maybe I'm crazy, or maybe I'm just high. But I swear when we're together, magic mushrooms and falling turtles fall from the skies. And just so you know, when I throw a fireball, I throw it just for you. When I leave floating boxes, I leave them just for you.
warp through time and space just for a kiss. Wish you'd get the picture, but it's the picture that you miss. Oh my princess, can't you see? I'll be super for you. Standing at the end of his level, my lungs hurt from trying to breathe in an underwater world. There's an ache in my back from fighting Goombas all day. I just want to hold your hand and feel your fingers curled. Oh, my heart's so empty, but you can clog that hole. So ditch that king and come with me. Love isn't how high you can jump on a flagpole.
Yeah.
And just so you know, when I throw a fireball, I throw it just for you. When I leave floating boxes, I leave them just for you. Walk through time and space just for a kiss. Wish you'd get the picture, but it's the picture that you miss. Oh my princess, can't you see? I'll be super.
For you.